Welcome to DevMode.fm, a podcast dedicated to the tools, techniques, and technologies used in modern web development. I'm Andrew Welch from NY Studio 107.
I'm Patrick Harrington from Mildly Geeky in Boston.
And today we have on Henri Helvetica. How you doing, Henri?
I'm doing very good. Great. Awesome. I'm hanging out.
Nice. I have a bone to pick with your name, by the way. Like, I have no problem. I know that I know when I first met you, I was calling you Henry, right? Because I'm an American. But I know it's Henri. But the problem is, then it's Helvetica. So I should call you Henri Helvetica.
I mean, you could, but I do respond to Henri. And I mean, the Helvetica thing is pretty interesting. And I mean, unless you guys have like a couple of days, I could tell you the story.
Well, we're going to find that out. But we got to get you set up here.
Okay. All right.
So if you were out in the Amazon room at the Rio Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada, at the World Series of Poker, at the final table bubble of the Omaha 8 event, and you're facing a call for your tournament life, and someone turns to you and says, hey, what was your journey into the tech business like? What would you say?
I'd probably tell them that it started right here in Las Vegas, because I found myself in an elevator during a trade show that I used to attend twice a year. And
we're not talking about AVN Awards, are we?
Well, oddly enough, nope. I remember getting in this elevator being like, what is going on right now?
I didn't recognize you.
Exactly. I was like, it just happened to be the AVN Awards. And I was like, this was my first time in Vegas. So that was pretty awesome.
Hold on. The miserable old guy next to you, he's calling the clock.
Yeah,
he's telling the dealer that you've taken too much time to make your decision. He's called the clock.
You got
30 seconds.
But honestly, it actually kind of did start there, because I used to work in apparel/fashion, and something that I started to do for clients, well, really for me, but to make my clients sort of work a little faster, I started to create these sort of small sites with all the product, because I was kind of sick of sending out line sheets and black and white illustrations. And then I started to take photos of my entire collection and just create very, very, you know, rudimentary sites. And I would just send that on, put it online, but I would also send it on a DVD just in case. DVDs, remember those? CD-ROMs?
I do. I remember I curated this lovely collection of CDs of all the music that I like, and I feel like such an idiot. You know?
Why?
Well, just because, first of all, I would scratch them inevitably and rebuy the same thing repeatedly. And now they're sitting in a little sleeve somewhere, and I don't do anything with them. I feel dumb that I even bought them to begin with.
At this point, now I could understand, you know, and I can get into that a little later. But it did actually, through the apparel and just wanting to get my clients to be able to look at product instead of line sheets, I started to create these little mini websites. Super, super, you know, easy sites, but it kind of, you know, I always remembered that.
So out of necessity, right? So something
absolutely.
Make your life easier. You're like, why don't I use this technology thing and make some part of my life easier to do it? And actually that kind of mirrors, if you remember, we did an interview with Simon Vrakliotis a little while ago.
Yeah.
And he kind of accidentally fell into the tech business, you know?
Yeah.
But I think everyone kind of accidentally falls into it. Maybe you were a kid and, you know, you were playing a game and you're like, oh, that looks really cool. And then you want to figure out how it works. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Lots of ways you can kind of just become an area of interest for it. So you were working for a fashion company and you built websites just to show off the apparel or products that you had.
Exactly.
And then how did you go further from there?
So, man, it's funny because I was in apparel, and like I said, I'd sort of grown accustomed to creating these little sites and putting it online, but sending it off to my clients as well. And then I left apparel and went sort of, I don't want to say back into music, because even though I was in apparel at the time, I still had a foot in music, because I mean, I had the time to do it, basically. It's one of those things where apparel, you really have to be around full time, say at key moments of the year. You have your fall sales, you have your fall and spring were the two big collections, and then the smaller ones were we called summer and holiday. But literally, I would really cram all my work in, say for fall, which is like the biggest sale, biggest collection probably for most companies. I really had to be in the office like 5-6 weeks in a row.
And you know, I knew someone that was in the apparel business. She worked at Calvin Klein and then worked at Donna Karan.
Okay.
And I remember her telling me that she had to fly to Italy for the whatever they had some kind of have a line, a manufacturing line that made some sweater or something that they had there. And she said the same sweater came off the line. And depending on the label they put on it, whether it was a Donna Karan sweater or whether it was going to Walmart, it was the same damn thing, but they charged 10 times more. Did you ever run into anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and these are the kind of things that some people know, realize, others don't. And sometimes they'll make small edits to the piece. You know, they'll add a little something here and there. But for the most part, a lot of pieces that you see out there are really manufactured out.
Right. And I'm not saying it's a case for all, but for a lot of things that unexpected to me, it literally was the same thing other than the label. I'm just like, you got to be kidding. It's amazing. I don't know. So how did you end up moving from apparel into then music again and then into tech? Like what happened?
So after I left apparel and, you know, I'd been sort of considering it because it was getting a little weird on the economy side and even sort of on the commerce side, I went back into music more full time because at the time, I still had a foot in music because the schedule allowed it. Anyone who's been into music management or running a small label, whatever, which I did, knows that a lot of times, you know, you could just put an hour here, an hour there, or just work at night, whatever. And the apparel thing, again, it just allowed me to do so much outside of apparel because, again, the hours were, I mean, I was essentially freelancing, even though I worked at a agency. So I went back into music after that more full time. And even though I was in music, but I was still creating like little assets and very sort of raw sites. I started to blog heavily and stuff like that too. But it was really when that was starting to get weird as well. My brother phones me up and he was like, you know, you should really sort of get back into tech, kind of, and or web at least. And I say be set back simply because even long before my apparel days, I'd been tinkering around. I mean, every so often I'll go home and see my parents and look at these bookshelves and look at all these books I was reading, like CSS and JS. And oh man, what do you call those books? Remember they were their covers look like very like Mondrian-y. You know what I'm talking about?
I know.
It was like the squares. It was like colors.
Yeah.
All right. What is Mondrian-y? I hope I'm not the only person listening.
He's an artist and he produced stuff in a very like cubic kind of overlapping rectangle kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Anyhow, and I'd long ago tinkered around, but it was one of those things where, you know, when you play around with things and you're the only one and you're starting to think that like, oh, maybe you're just a little strange and whatnot and you don't really stick to it. That was sort of like me in the web and me and sort of like computers very early, even though I always kept it around, but I just kind of kept it to myself. I didn't really talk about it. So he thought, having seen me sort of tinker around very early, he was like, you should get back into this because things are really going. And my brother works at what I'd like to call the fruit company. And I sort of listened and I kind of brushed up on web and front end, obviously.
Well, that's good. At least you didn't have a brother that was just like, nah, this internet thing is a passing fad, you know?
Tell me about it.
Yeah. At least you didn't have a brother like that.
I mean, he's a good dude. He's, like I said, he sort of, you know, made his way up the ladder and he's been over at the fruit company for a good 13, 14 years now, something like that.
So, but when you say that you get back into tech, like what were you doing? Because the way that I know you, like I knew you in kind of like in passing, like we had gone to the same clubs for a while, but just said hi in passing, you know what I mean? Yeah. But where I actually met you was when you gave a presentation at the .all conference in Montreal. For anyone who doesn't know, the .all conference is a conference for craft CMS, and it was up in Montreal. And Henri gave a presentation there that was connecting all the dots, I think was your presentation. Yeah. So when you say you're doing stuff in tech, were you doing presentation type of stuff? Were you doing development work? Like what kind of freelance work were you doing?
So I started, my first gig was at an agency and I was on the dev team. And it was a welcome change because at the time I'd done so much freelance work, I was ready to get back into an office, you know?
It's like, so funny because I've run my own business since I was very, very young. And so I've had a decent number of friends of mine that have talked to me about it. And one of the things I say to them all the time is that everyone thinks they want to be their own boss. And a lot of people realize they make a terrible boss. Because freelancing is not for everybody. It takes a certain demented kind of individual to actually do well at it, I think.
Absolutely. And so many things can happen when it comes to freelancing. Ideally, you have great clients, people you've known for a while. They just need to get some work done. And it's very effortless. And on a less ideal situation, you're out there fishing for clients. You got to get out there and see where the opportunities lay and whatnot. A lot of that is also the network you've built over time, right? So in my case, and just, you know, prior to web, there's so much work I was able to get done just through my years in apparel and my years in music. And those are two areas, again, that just constantly need little things done, big things done and whatnot. And, you know, do they know anyone that could get this done? And it's like, boom, your name comes up, you know? So with regards to being at the agency, that gave me a taste of what, you know, sort of like quote unquote corporate web work looked like. And then how
I got screaming.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest. It just reminded me of how weird people are sometimes. I always bring up the fact that the person who would sit next to me would slack me.
Mm. Yep.
You know?
Yeah,
literally. Like I could reach out. He was about as close to me as it is to my external monitor right now. I could reach out to him and just tap him on the shoulder, but they would slack me instead.
I'm feeling attacked now though, Henri, because my wife and I sometimes text each other in the same house.
No, that's fine in the same house. You're on different floors. Like this person.
Not always.
Like, oh, okay, well, I get it, you know, so. But, you know, to me, that was interesting. I'll say that much. But it taught me, it gave me a little taste of the corporate side, which was totally fine. But having done freelance and whatnot, I was very accustomed to that process. So, and at the same time, I also kind of discovered the whole sort of speaker circuit, which I thought was really interesting. And sort of speaking was never foreign to me because my apparel days taught me a lot of that. And even prior to that, I'll get into it, but I had to do presentations with complete strangers all the time. I mean, like the big shows, especially in Vegas, like I'd mentioned, I would go there twice a year. Actually, the trade show I went to in Vegas was the second biggest trade show in Vegas at the time. Number one was CES, yep. And number two was this thing called Magic, which is the trade show I was telling you about.
And I remember we used to go to CES sometimes, not mm-hmm. too often because it actually didn't overlap with our business that much. Mm-hmm. But CES was, we were joking about it before, but for a number of years, it overlapped with the AVN stuff that was going mm-hmm. on there.
Yep.
And I swear, I think that was coordinated. You know what I mean? I really do. I really think it was.
I mean, Las Vegas, they have their own little, you know, AVN thing happening daily.
Sure.
You know, if you remember, because it's like you could just walk out of any kind of, you know, trade show and you had people there waiting.
Yeah, but it's not legal.
I mean, they figured it out.
Right. You know? Right. They got the system down.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. But as I was saying, it taught me a lot. So when it came to just presenting to me, I was like, oh, this is no big deal. You know, I've been in rooms full of strangers that probably never run into again. And on the web in tech, it's like you actually would run into these people again. It's kind of like, oh, okay, I haven't seen you since such and such. That was never a big deal in my head. And then, you know, the freelance work I did was very some odd little clients here and there that just wanted to have their sites looked at, because that's when I really start to get into the performance bit.
Mm.
And that was super interesting, right? Because the way I discovered it was just really around, I think it was around the time that the iPhones were starting to promote like their retina screens. And I was like, retina screen, what's that? And after I understood what that was in terms of like images and pixel density, and I was like, oh man, this is going to be weird on the performance side. And I started to attend a performance meetup in Toronto, and that just, boom, I was kind of hooked on that side.
Yeah, because that's what I know most about you from is that you organize a couple of local conferences, right? So you organize the Toronto Web Perf conference. And I do want to get into you with that a little bit later, because it takes a certain kind of psycho to get into Web Perf. I know, because I'm one of them.
Absolutely.
And then also you organize the Jamstack Toronto conference, but also you came out of nowhere and then you're presenting it just all of these conferences all over the place. What is this a result of your people skills in terms of being really good at building a network and connections and that kind of thing? And is it intentional? Do you prefer organizing the meetings and presenting at conferences as opposed to sitting in a cubicle and hammering out code?
Fantastic question. And I'm probably going to say yes. Mm. And I'll tell you why. You know, attending the meetup was really interesting because it was like, oh, I can show up here and learn stuff and speak to the people who are actually sharing this information. So if I have a question, it's, you're right there. And on top of that, I'm hanging out with like-minded people.
Right.
And so that was a completely different sort of experience for me on the tech side. Because I still remember this person who was like, oh, you need to go to these meetups. And I remember my first meetup, which was not the performance one, but just the first meetup in general. I remember looking around the room being like, oh, wow, there's a lot of people here. And the music side of me also informed me that when you have a lot of like-minded people together, like there's an opportunity to do something.
Mm.
And so, you know, as a music, you know, if I'm a musician and I don't know, I do Rush covers and I find out that everyone in this room or like 75% of this room are Rush fans, it's like, I need to do something right here.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the meetup side, I think that informed me that there are probably opportunities to just organize or, you know, sort of like harness this community and do something later on. So I was just sort of, I was starting to attend meetups, obviously to learn a little bit of stuff, but also just to kind of like understand the ecosystem.
Mm.
So I'll jump around.
That's really smart because I've heard people that have started podcasts and they're like, one of the reasons I started podcasts is I could bring in experts and they could teach me stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Right. And it sounds like you're kind of like, you're kind of doing the same thing here. You're like, hey, this is great. Like I can use my people skills to get everyone together and then I can soak it all in, right?
Absolutely. You know, because there's certain things you're going to realize. And it's like, I would tell this to juniors or newcomers, you know, there are certain things that you'll realize you're never going to come across if you just do what we call in French, the métro boulot dodo, which is like, you know, I get
up.
What'd
you call me?
So it's an expression in French, which is métro boulot dodo, which is métro is like, you know, metro, like subway. Boulot means work and dodo is just going to bed. So if you get into the cycle of just going to work and going to bed every day and not breaking out of it, you'll have probably a very decent time making money, being employed. Mm-hmm. But the discovery that I think is really important is potentially not going to happen.
It sounds like a very gray, overcast life, at least to me.
It could be. It could be. But, you know, it's up to you to sort of take the off ramp and go somewhere else, say one day. But yeah, you know, the meetup, again, taught me that, showed me that there are communities out there doing things. And like you said, it's like, hey, I get to learn for free from someone and I could, you know, ask questions and whatnot. And obviously that started my sort of path. And then I started to attend the web performance meetup. And then shout outs to Barbara, who ran the meetup and at one point was like, you know what? I'm stepping away from this. I think you should be the one to front this.
Nice.
And I was like, let's go. I mean, I'm with it. So you do that little, you know, that little swap on meetup.com and I became the principal on that. But, you know, to me, that was still kind of small fries, but it was the opportunity to sort of now join a small group of meetups around the world who all knew each other. And it's like, you start to trade stuff, you know, information. It's like, hey, there's this conference coming up. You should go check it out. Hey, there's this conference over here. Here's a ticket because I have one from being in this sort of web perf community. And I start to realize it's like, hey, you could sort of really do something with this.
Yeah. But Henri, every seed starts small, right?
Yep.
And so I don't think it's anything ever to be any number of things that I've worked on. They all start small, right? it's up to you to put the curation and the caring and the work in to make them grow into something.
Absolutely. But
I think it's incredible that you mentioned Rush covers. It is incredible that you did that. Okay. Okay, so Rush was a band that my brother used to listen to when he was growing up a lot.
Okay.
And they have a famous song called YYZ.
Of course.
And I've known this song for decades. I've known this song. Literally today, I realized, oh, shit. It's called YYZ because that's the Toronto airport code.
Oh.
Ding, 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 ding. Huh.
And Rush is a Canadian band, for anyone that doesn't know. I knew this song for forever. It wasn't until today that I was just like, holy crap. And I knew that YYZ was the Toronto code because I've flown in and out of Toronto many, many times. But
blow your mind some more?
Okay, do it. Blow it. Do it.
Dude, so you remember the song by heart, right? Ding, 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 ding. Dude, that little bell, the triangle, that's Morse code for YYZ.
That's incredible. And I'm going to blow your mind even more.
Uh-oh.
Even more. Do you know why the Toronto's airport code is YYZ?
Wait, I may know this. Hold on.
I'm gonna tell you because it relates to what you just said, and it's gonna, mines are just gonna be exploding everywhere. Okay, so first of all of the airport codes in Canada start with a Y, right? That's to start with. Now, you mentioned something about Morse code, YYZ. So yeah. The YZ was the code for the Toronto Morse code station back when they used to communicate over telegraph lines that ran along the railroads. Okay. There was a station there and it was the YZ station. And that's where it came from. They built the airport on the same area where this old Morse code station that ran along the rail lines was. So that, you know, they had the rail line for transporting goods and services everywhere. And then they strung the telegraph cable along the same lines. And there was a station, there's a Morse code railway station that was the YZ station. And that's where the Toronto YYZ code came from. And the fact that Rush plays to the beat of that in the YYZ song is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy.
I mean, Patrick's probably like, what's going on right now?
You'll always learn something new on devmode.fm. Yeah.
But it's super interesting because I remember this one time I went on this deep dive and I found someone who wrote this like long dissertation about the song. And it's actually regarded across the globe. If you go into YouTube and punch in YYZ, there's probably like 1,000 covers, yep. You know, especially guys on drums. By the way, rest in peace, Neil Peart, who passed away sometime last year actually. But yeah, that's actually kind of interesting right there.
I remember at one point I conflated YYZ with YKK, which is the zipper company. Like the
exactly.
Just about every zipper has got YKK.
Well-regarded zipper company. And again, I know these things from their apparel biz. I'll give you a quick little, it's not a nugget, but just a little fact. I've been doing this talk recently on images just because of all the changes that have taken place. I called it Moving Pictures because moving pictures, but also Moving Pictures, which is a Rush album.
Oh, right. The album.
Yes.
Where they're famously moving those. Oh my God.
Ding, 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 ding.
Oh my God. Yeah, dude. Hilarious.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? The music is just finding its way into tech.
Great that you're throwing those little nuggets in that only people that know it will get it, but the ones that get it are going to be like, I see what you did there, Henri.
Oh, totally, dude. I've done that a couple of times. But let's get back to the whole subject at the hand here, because I'll go music geek for like a couple hours. But getting back to the meetup thing, it brought me back to something that I, again, love is curation of a particular event. I did it in the music side because at some point I left sort of the performance end and just start to curate shows from like the look and feel of the event to finding the performers, finding sponsors and whatnot, and just creating something that I knew people would enjoy. And I ended up working sometimes the sort of the obscure end of music, which again, sort of parallels what I did with the meetups and the sort of conferencing. Performance was, as you could probably attest to, it was an obscure end of the development, you know? So it didn't bother me so much to sort of get into that side of tech and having to do a bit more explaining than most about the environment. So it's,
What was the, you were scratching with that? Were you into time to first bite, image optimization, what would you get into? I'm very interested to know, depending on when you got into web speed optimization, whatnot, it's meant different things of yours.
Absolutely. And I mean, my entry into the performance side was literally, again, I remember to this very day, just the whole, like I mentioned, the retina images on the phone. And I'm like, oh man, what is this going to mean now? And I sat down on my desk and trying to pick apart what the future was for web. And I started to read book and documentation. And at the time, O'Reilly, when it was still getting books out the door, they were the ones who probably had the majority of the web performance literature.
Sure. Yep.
So you start with 2007, Souder's first book, Faster Websites, 2009, Even Faster Websites. Okay. And then that just led to a bunch of other books like Performance Daybook by Stoyan. I could just go through a bunch. The one that really sort of made things click was probably Laura Hogan's, because that was like super anticipated and she had been able to put working drafts out, and I just kept reading everything as it came out. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, that just exposed me to a little bit of everything. Obviously, Ilya Gregorik's High Performance, what was it called? High Performance, the networking book, High Performance Something Networking.
Okay.
I mean, the one he had been rumored to write in like a weekend or something like that, like a thousand, it's like 1,000 pages in a couple of days. He's like, yeah, it's ready.
Yeah, it's interesting. I kind of started into the web really around 2009 and worked for a great group out of Boston. They were all .NET. And it was interesting back then, the biggest thing we were looking at was how to reduce time to first byte. They're building bigger and bigger, more complex things that honestly weren't doing much caching in the back end back then. And so you'd have, 3.5 seconds before the first byte came across.
That's a nightmare.
Yeah, but I think like everyone was moving so fast and the web was changing so quickly. People weren't stopping and saying, hold on, what's going on with TTFB? And now we've seen, I feel like a lot of places do have the time to first byte under control for the most point. And now it's almost like, what are we doing to the front end? And how much are we loading that up with crap? And it's interesting how it just ebbs and flows between the two. And like you said, yeah, when everyone starts doing Retina, you think, oh, twice as wide. It's really four times as large images coming across. And even
absolutely
nine times if you have a 3x size. But then, yeah, WebP and media queries to make sure you're not. Yeah, it's so cool. You'll never be bored being in the web optimization world.
I'm impressed, first of all, Henri, that you read books. and I say that not as an insult to you, but I haven't actually finished a book and I can't even remember when. Yeah. Like literally, I can't even remember when I actually finished a book.
I mean, if you ask me now, me and reading books, it's like, first it better be an ebook so I can just drop it in the iPad and get Siri to read it to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I mean,
it's hard to find the time to really,
Well, I tend to do more with experimentation and reading articles and videos and that type of thing. But the idea of getting a book and sitting down to read it somewhere just seems like something that just never happened. And maybe it's because I have kids and there's just no way that I would get the quiet to be able to do it to begin with. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, it was super interesting because it was like, what is this performance stuff? And so you're excited. And on top of that, O'Reilly, they had the Velocity Conference, which was a more or less performance conference when it first came out. And they also had, if you remember, so obviously, if you went to the conference, you had your ticket and you can go and check out all the talks. But they also had, I guess, maybe about an hour, a bit of content that would stream on the web for free. So they had all these lightning talks at the start of every O'Reilly Velocity conference, and I would watch those. So that's how I saw, obviously, people like Souders and Bruce Lawson, who had spoken there a few times because at the time he was working at Opera. So, I mean, the performance end was really interesting because it was assets. You know, we're loading assets. We're talking about, we had these stopwatches in our hands, like, okay, how fast is this going? And then it also opened us up to the browser conversation, right? What's the browser doing? What are they implementing? What APIs are coming out, which is why from time to time you'll see him on Twitter say, browsers are awesome. If things are loading fast, yes, developers have a say in it, but go thank your local browser engineer because they're hard at work. And
I want to see if you found something to be true. So one of the things, I've done a ton of performance work in my day.
You have?
Yeah. And one of the things that I found to be true is that there aren't a whole lot of people that are coming to you and wanting to pay for it. I think that it has gotten better recently, but web performance, I think I kind of put it in the same bucket with accessibility in that it's something that everyone agrees we should be doing, but there's a limited subset of people that are actually doing it. I think that web performance is, don't get me wrong, like I think web performance is incredibly important. And in fact, I probably have gone off the deep end insisting on performance. I've had people like Patrick is giving me crap for certain things that I do that I'm just like, well, but it's faster. And he's just like, yeah, but it's annoying.
I am millisecond.
I just want to let you know, I'm coming as a friend, but I'm just saying, I look at it, and yes, I've had a number of corporate clients that they see the value, especially when they have an e-commerce or conversion, and you can substantively show that this makes a big difference. But kind of like the wider world, like the smaller site, I don't know. Like a lot of agencies and developers are just kind of, they just want to get it done and they consider it being done as the end point and they're never doing the performance auditing or the accessibility auditing and that kind of stuff. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a question of incentives. You have a certain budget and if there's no incentive to build things for page speed and whatnot, because it takes more time, it cuts into profits, it's not going to happen. I think it has to turn into that the clients or the business needs to make that a priority. And I think e-commerce businesses, you'd see it a little bit more. You know, there's so much research about what even a small delay can do in terms of conversions. But yeah, it becomes a, you know, I was an economics major, it becomes a question of incentives and where are people going to put their time to be able to get things to completion and get things done, move on to the next project. And if they're not being paid to make sites fast, they might not make sites fast. Yeah. Hopefully they do. And I think everyone wants to do a good job, but everyone has a limited amount of time to complete a project. And if it turns into, okay, the client is asking for this feature, it's going to hurt the page speed, but this is going to make them happy and they won't notice a quarter second change in that load time, they're probably just going to put in the feature.
Yeah. You know, I agree 100%. And as you said, clients aren't necessarily inclined to sort of pay for it. And it's funny because as I discovered Web Performance, I discovered accessibility as well. Mm-hmm. And again, kudos to the Toronto Accessibility Meetup Group because it's probably one of the better ones across the globe just because of how involved they are with the community and the people who run it. But I sort of chose the performance path because I was just like, oh man, I got to pick one or the other. And I just really want to get into the perf a bit more. But at least on the accessibility side, you actually have the law. And at some point, you have to face accessibility. That's maybe. Without a doubt.
Hopefully.
I mean, hopefully. Yeah. I mean, you could sort of, you know what I mean? Like you could sort of dance around and hopefully, you know, no one knocks on your door saying, hey, this is not.
This is the accessibility police.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I know. But yeah, you know, it may be lawyers saying you've been served, and it's happened absolutely. To Target. It's happened to other big organizations, and that can be
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that can at least open the door to making sure people are thinking about it. If the, you know, the specter of that.
Certainly, so I'm not. You know, I'm not saying the business isn't there, folks. Like I know Harry Roberts makes his living doing optimizations, and there are a number of other people that literally make their living as a freelancer doing web performance stuff. Like I get it. Yeah. I'm just saying it's not like I don't have clients beating down my door. So one of the things that I have done is I have tried to educate clients on this is the profile of your site in these various performance tools. And then I have a benchmark that I can show them the work afterwards. And they may not understand what I did, but they can see Google says that it went from a 54 red to a 98 green, you know, and they get that that means that Google is saying this thing is good. And I found that as a selling tool. Is education something that we as developers need to be doing, Henri?
Certainly. And I was actually going to follow that up with, I think the web performance is certainly, I think, has been sort of, I shouldn't say ingested, but the way I think I sort of discuss web performance now is more on a best practices level and make it so that it's like you have to specialize in this. Like you can if you want to, but I think in today's age, in 2020, considering how the web is being consumed, I think web performance is best discussed as a best practice. Like, hey, make sure your assets are like this. Make sure you don't do too many requests. You can go through a list of stuff and then you can get pretty granular about it. But I think there's a level where it's like, if you have this kind of understanding about web performance, because it really is a best practice, and then you can get into the other stuff a little later, like the deep diving. And I discussed this, I remember at, where was I? Oh, I know where I was. If I look at this sticker right here, performance now, because I'm like,
say, you have a prolific laptop cover. I love the, exactly. the details you have. Yeah,
the Performance Now conference in Amsterdam. Again, a conference dedicated to web performance, which aren't very common these days, despite its importance. But Tim Cadlick had asked me what I thought was a considerable advancement or what I was pleased with regards to web performance. And love it or hate it, I believe that Lighthouse has had a tremendous effect on how people look at performance. You can go into Twitter right now and some are going to pick it apart. Oh, it's not this, it's not that. But it had people thinking about it and it had people bragging about it.
Yeah. And I mean, as Andrew said, Andrew, I fully agree with you. I think as a sales tool, if you ever want to get in the door, and I mean, unfortunately, there's a lot of people that are serving up less than productive emails saying, did you know your site is scoring this? But if you're already started, if you have a warm lead and you can show them, hey, here's your site. It's marking, you know, it's 15 on Google PageSpeed score, which Henri, you know, now is, I'm sure you know, now uses Lighthouse behind the scenes for everything. Mm-hmm. You can say you're scoring 15. Here's a site I just wrapped last month. They have a 94.
Right.
You know, and here's all the research that shows that this might be affecting how high up you are. Like, you're at the point where it's actually pushing you down. Google's not indifferent about you. They're actually penalizing you. That could definitely perk someone's ears up and get you saying, well, wait a second, why isn't our current developer, why isn't our current agency raising this flag, and why aren't they able to hit these numbers?
And they might have no idea about it, right? That's what makes it so powerful, is that they don't have to understand.
So many times the CEO, like, they get that link, they find out, and it becomes, could use salty language, and a measuring competition to see, like, wait a second, why is my website here? My competitor is here. And what am I?
You're right. You're right, because it takes a certain kind of psycho to be a CEO of a company. And you do have to have that competitive nature in you. And I have definitely found that same thing, where if you can show them that they are beating, you know, Jim Joe Bob's shop down the road, they love it. You know, they absolutely love it. And it's the kind of thing, like, if you go to the doctor and they take a number of measurements like blood pressure and cholesterol, and you may not really know what everything really means, but if they show you that it has improved over time, you get that, even though you don't understand all the science behind it, you know, and it's kind of the same thing here.
Absolutely. And as you had mentioned about the emails, Patrick, I think there's a particular way of approaching this, because I think also something that was taking place at one point is that there was this sort of condescending nature to our performance aficionados, the way we would talk about how bad certain sites were. It came off as like, it's almost like cancel culture. It's like, that site? No, you don't want to mess with those guys. Look at that score. You know, they're scoring 9. It's this. And it was never like, hey, let me give you a hand with this, because I think that, you know, if we would, you know, if we reduce these requests and cache that and yada, 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 we can get our scores up. And I never forgot this once a talk I gave. It might have been a lightning talk too. Someone came up to me afterwards. They're like, hey, dude, you know, I really enjoyed that performance talk. I'm like, oh, thank you very much. You know, yada, yada, yada. We're going back and forth. And he told me, he's like, hey, I usually don't sit around for these talks because all they do is attack, and they're never really like, hey, you know, this is how you can improve and X, Y, and Z. And I never forgot that, because he was like, a lot of these performance talks, tone is off.
Yep.
And I was like, bing, you know, right. And even though I didn't think I was that dude, but I was like, I want to make sure I'm never that person.
So I was that person, mea culpa. I'm going to come out and I'm going to say it right now. I 100% was that person, because
I was too.
Well, let me give you my background. So I was actually a photography major in college. So you would get projects and you would have crits, where they were called critiques, where whenever a project was done, everyone put their stuff up on the wall and everyone just tore it to shreds. You know, typically it's kind of what it was, right?
Yeah.
But it wasn't mean-spirited. Like, no one was doing it to stomp on you or whatever, but it was very critical. And there were some people that left the room crying sometimes, you know, because they would put a whole lot of work into it, and it would just, the professor would just tear it to shreds and stuff like that. And so that's kind of where I was coming from. There's a channel in a Slack where people would post work that they had just finished. And I would jump on it, and I would start running all the tools on it. And I would say, oh, you could improve it by doing this, you could improve it by doing that. And at some point, you know, someone talked to me on the side, and they're just like, Andrew, they're not
afraid to post their website if it's not a 91 plus.
Yeah,
literally. Exactly. Someone posts in the Craft Slack announcements board, and Andrew comes in with, here's your Google PageSpeed score, if you didn't already know it.
And I want to be clear, I was coming from a good place on this. I thought, I was like, I'm doing everyone a favor, you know? But that is not how it was perceived, right? So people were just like, oh, you know. And so the person took me aside and was just like, Andrew, I know your intentions are good, but people are not, even though they say they're looking for feedback, because that's what was happening, is people were site in, any feedback welcome. And he's like, even though people say they're looking for feedback, they don't really want it. And in addition to that, you should be charging for this advice that you're giving them, you know? And I was just like, you know what? You're right. Like, I'm trying to do this from, I'm trying to come from a good place from this stuff, but I don't want to piss people off. Like, that's not my goal.
The biggest thing correct in private. Like, yeah, you know, yeah. A DM might help people and say, hey, you know, here are some ways you could improve your score, but doing it publicly can rain on someone's parade a little bit, even if that's not your intent.
And even now, even when people are like, please, you know, give me criticism on this stuff, I'm just like, I mean, if you pay me, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's, I remember when earlier on I used to sort of audit sites and post stuff on Twitter. And I remember, and you may remember this as well, Ilya Gogorek had a site for a while called perf.fail.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, well, it's gone now, I think. But I think he had like two or three posts. And it was literally that. It was a little bit of, you know, a little bit of shaming. But, you know, you would run into these sites, you're like, wow, how did this go live? You know what I mean? Like that was like, that's all you could think of. And, you know, you want to sort of post these examples. And he just stopped. And I think that the shaming element started to just not resonate well.
Yeah. You know? And it goes into anytime I see a piece of code, I really try not to judge the developer or developers that came before me. You don't know what timeline they were under, what budget they were under, what feature requests or what weird specs or what, like, you cannot know until you're like, okay, everyone got here, everyone was trying to do a good job in one way or another. At some point something had to give, probably, for this monstrosity to come into being. And yeah, you need a lot of empathy, I think, looking at other people's work.
And also when someone presents, I mean, the big lesson for me was when someone presents something, even if they say that they want feedback, they probably just want to hear nice job. You know, which to me, it actually kind of bothers me, because I'm like, you know, I'm one of those people that, sure, I enjoy compliments like anyone else does, but I also feel like I've never improved when someone's just like, hey, nice job, you know,
especially
if I didn't do a nice job on it. You know,
I think for the most part, people say they can handle criticism. But it's tough. And I mean, I'll be the first one to say I can handle it. I think, you know, my dad taught me how to. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But I think there's a way of phrasing things and helping them learn.
Yep.
And that's it. And I think at the end of the day, the entire journey is one that's the path is sort of laid in learning something new, education, discovery. What I like to call delight and discovery. This is what you try to create. Is someone going to discover something and just be completely elated with that moment? And that's what I try to do in music a lot. And I'm actually trying to do the same in tech right now, which sort of, I mean, it's been a sort of loop, but, you know, brings you back to the idea of sort of organizing these meetups, allowing people to congregate and learn something together, have that kind of discourse together, whether it be in like back channels or in the actual chat, where they're like, oh, I didn't know this was possible, yada, 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 yada. And I think I get this again, as I talk about my dad, I get this from my parents. My parents are retired teachers. And I mean, I look back and I'm just like, I can't believe I'm doing this. I feel like a teacher.
But that's what I was going to say, Henri. Everything that you're talking about, you just summarized it perfectly by saying helping people to learn. So whether it's the conference talks that you're giving or the meetups that you're organizing, I mean, it really seems like something that drives you in some way is helping people learn. You're getting satisfaction out of that. And I definitely feel that, because I try to do that too with some of the articles that I write up and some of the other media that I create, because it really is a rewarding thing to help people learn.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. You know, it's, and this is the reason why pre-pandemic, obviously, I started to, it's like Toronto's got quite a few boot camps downtown. And I just started to volunteer an hour of lunch and learns at boot camps. And I would go in there and talk about performance, obviously, simply because I always told them, it's like, listen, I'm going to talk about something. Yeah, they're not going to take time to discuss during your boot camp because you're already moving at 65 miles an hour and there's not much time to slow down and get a snack. But this is stuff you're probably going to run into in the wild and you're not going to understand what's going on. And so I started to do that once a quarter per boot camp. So I usually do a couple boot camps. And yeah, I would stick around as well after. It was like, hey, you know, I'll do some office hours after if you want. And if you want to talk about some stuff that you didn't really understand, I'll stick around. And I don't think it's an absolute must people do this, but if you have an opportunity to get someone interested even in this area of the web that they didn't know existed, whether it be accessibility, whether it be performance or CSS, JavaScript. Ooh, JavaScript. I think it's super rewarding, you know, and they'll look back and be like, you know, this guy used to come in for lunch and learns. Didn't know who he was. I left there like, I don't know what this guy's talking about, but I went home and I looked at the deck. He shared with us. And I started to click and I went out down this rabbit hole of performance. And now I totally get it. I think about that.
Yeah. Fast forwarding to right now, it's January 2021 at the time we're recording this. I know you've done the Image Ready online conferences. How's the last year been for you though, in terms of conferences obviously haven't been a thing for almost a year now. How have you been doing with regard to that? I mean, Andrew and I first maybe learned of you at .all in what, late 2019. How's that going and how do things look for someone like you who does a lot of conference work?
So that was super interesting. And this year, 2020 is one of those...
all just blurring into one long...
Yeah, exactly right. 2021 is really 2020 prime. It was definitely weird slash tough at one point. And it was just on so many levels, just even like from a personal to just professional, because I always bring up the fact that, first of all, I had a hard time bringing it up. But at one point, I remember stepping out of my house and just looking down the street and it was so dead empty. And just, I felt like I was looking at the rest of my year. And this was like end of March, maybe. And I was just sitting there shrugging. I'm like, I have no idea what's happening. And no one else did. But as a freelancer, you're just like, you're literally like, I just dove out of a plane and I don't even know if this parachute works.
Yeah.
But slowly but surely, things kind of came around. I suddenly some emails came in, some calls came in. Obviously, the stuff was being done online and it was a lot different. I had a little bit of writing commissioned, which I've always wanted to get back into, but I'd done so much writing previously that in music specifically that I've always felt like, you know, my pen was out of ink because I'd start writing that I'm like, oh, I can't finish this. But that's something I'm trying to change. But I was able to manage. And there are some people out there that I've definitely shot some emails to thanking them, and they probably don't know how much it meant. But yeah, it was absolutely wild. But I will say this, it taught me that, I mean, the direction tech is taking right now, obviously online is almost the exclusive component for us. And even as things clear up in, I'm going to say potentially maybe 22, probably 23, I think the online component is going to stay or is here to stay, because I think we are going to be at the mercy of just confidence, you know?
Confidence. Yeah, I look at video of people close together, even videos of myself, and it's going to be like almost a little bit of PTSD of like getting together and being when we can take masks off. And yeah, it's such a weird, like overwhelming concern for public health that I've never had before. And it's worrying. I feel like there's going to be a lot of hunger for people to get together and congregate. I very much looking forward to whenever the next .all is going to be, because man, there's a lot of people that I miss. But yeah, it's going to be a while before things feel normal. And yeah, I hear you, man. But yeah, I think online is to stay. I don't think it's a substitute, but I think it can augment how we get together and how we learn and communicate. And I'm glad it's working for you.
I mean, it's still an experiment, right? Because so something that, again, the music side taught me, I worked with a division of Red Bull called RBMA, which is not really around anymore. So it stands for Red Bull Music Academy. For any of the academics out there, I can tell you all about it, but I won't. One thing they did, though, was very early, and I'm going to say long before anyone, they believed that the web was going to be a massive portal, and they started to just record their lectures and put them online.
Mm.
And at one point, you're like, whatever, I can, you know, watch it when I want to, but you know, you didn't really pay attention to it like that. But what they did was really doubled down on the production value. They believed that when you went back to watch it, the fidelity had to be there. For sure, audio and certainly video if you could. And if you go back and watch some of the early videos, it's like 4:3 resolution. I mean, 4:3
aspect ratio.
Aspect ratio, yeah, and whatnot. But the fact is, at the time, that was fine.
Right.
And the audio was still stereo and whatnot. But as time went on, everything was like crisper and they had like the booms in the cameras and the audio was crisp. And it taught me that this is where things had to go if you had to create online content.
Mm.
So last year, in the middle of the crisis, you know, people are like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And I'm like, listen, the online is going to be here. It's going to stay. You have to work on that content. So it's going to have to be crispy videos. It's going to have to be good audio quality, you know, so that when people are watching it, they're completely engaged. They're not in a closet with an echoing microphone from your laptop. And people are going to have to make that investment, you know,
yeah.
Because we're not going to go back to the packed, you know, theater anytime soon.
I mean, Henry, I'm hoping what I'm getting to is I'm hoping that either as a, you know, a spectator or speaker or, you know, in whatever capacity, I want to come up to Toronto and sit in on one of your, I know we've been talking about it back and forth for a little while. I totally want to do it. You're right around the corner from me. I want all of this stuff to get better so we don't have to worry about it anymore. And I can go up there and I can be there with the crispy video and audio in person. You
know what I mean? Canada will have us back.
You know, I don't know if you remember, but I think we almost had something scheduled right before the everything hit, and you got a little busy, which is totally cool. And then after that, I was like, boom, it's over, you know. And yeah, it's going to be weird because, again, you know, we like the classic meetup takes place at an office, but are they going to let you in now? You know, the likelihood is not.
Yeah.
And for anyone who's really entering tech right now or who has been in tech and hasn't really experienced that conference, the camaraderie that takes place, that alone is worth being there.
Yeah. Well, and I still hope we can do it. I think that about wraps it up for another episode of the devmode.fm podcast. To have every episode sent to you, subscribe to our RSS feed. I'm reading this from memory, so I have no idea whether Patrick actually trimmed it down or not. But please give us a like, give us a review. And for the devmode.fm podcast, I'm Andrew Welch.
I'm Patrick Harrington.
And thank you so much, Henri Helvetica, for coming on, man.
Hey, man, thank you for having me. I know this, we sort of went around in a bunch of circles, but hopefully people caught something from that.
I'm hoping so too.
I just saw the notes right there.
We got a hard break, but listen, I got to tell you guys something real quick. This is hilarious. That bet that I told you guys earlier about when we were off air.
Get me in.
During the podcast, he doubled down. He doubled down.
We need a one.
No way.
So now he's handing me $1,000, apparently.
I was going to say a grand now?
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Wait. Stop. That's amazing. 80-1 odds? No, he increased it to 1,000. He's taken 1,000. It's still 40
still 40 to 1, but he's increasing the amount of money. He's doubling down.
Well, tell him that he's looking for more action.